Thank you very much, Pam. And I'd like to thank everybody for letting me share my story with you tonight. I know just before this meeting, about a half an hour before this meeting, I was thinking to myself, you know, I don't think I've got anything to say, except my name is Lynn, I'm a nicotine addict in recovery, and that I know for sure, that I know positively, and I concentrate on that every day at least once. It'll go through my mind. Why? Because I want to remind myself that I am powerless over nicotine and that my life has become unmanageable. How I got here, some of you have already heard before, so please bear with me. I had had several attempts, I made several attempts to try and stop smoking. And of course, like everyone else, I picked up. I didn't have a support program at the time. Well, I had a support program, but it wasn't for nicotine. And I think the longest I ever had was 3 months. But the point of it is, I always picked up. And there were like two or three things that got me to hit my bottom. One of them, I was down at the local Big Boy one day, and a fellow there and I got to talking, and naturally we got to talking about smoking. I don't know why. But he mentioned that a friend of his had been fined $5,000 for buying his cigarettes online. Well, guess where I was buying my cigarettes? Online. And neither his friend nor I had claimed them on our Michigan taxes. And after that conversation, I just realized how honest I was being. You know, it's a lie by omission, but dishonesty is dishonesty. And in the other 12-step program that I belong to, honesty is one of the main features, or one of the main characteristics that they emphasize so much. Even people who have an emotional problem or a mental problem can recover if they have the capacity to be honest. And I didn't read that anyplace. I just quoted it. Okay. So that scared me. That really, really scared me. And there were a couple of other reasons, you know, combined with that. And I didn't wake up one morning and say, I am going to stop smoking today. After every quit I had when I picked up the cigarette again, I was just a smoker again. And it didn't really bother me that I picked up. Because, you see, I wanted to smoke. But this time when I came, and I don't know what day it was. Well, I know what day it was. It was April 15th of 2005. I'll never forget that day. I came into my apartment. I had been someplace. And as I walked in the door, I'm pulling out my cigarettes with one hand, and I'm getting my lighter with the other hand, trying to shut the door at the same time. And as I walked into my apartment and was lighting the cigarette, excuse me, the thought went through my head. It's time to put the nicotine down. Now, I will say this, I don't stress it too very often, but that thought was not my own. And the only reason I know that is that the word nicotine was vocabulary at that time. If I had been thinking that, it would have been, it's time to put the cigarettes down. Not nicotine, because I had never heard of the word nicotine. I mean, I'd probably had heard of it, but I never used it, never thought of it in relation to cigarette smoking, I don't know why, until I came to Voices of Nicotine Recovery. But you've got to see, I had 3/4 of a pack of cigarettes left, and it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, like any good addict, I smoked them. But I was bound and determined that I would be done 1 minute before midnight that night. And I've never smoked so much, so fast, so furious in all my life. Never occurred to me that I could throw them away or soak them underwater and just not smoke them. No, I had to smoke them all. But the point is, at 11:59, I stubbed out the last cigarette of that pack. And I had already gotten rid of my ashtrays, and I still had my lighter, of course, because I had to light my cigarettes. No, in fact, I threw my lighter away. I have some matches, and I was using them to light my cigarettes. I got rid of everything that I could that would remind me of cigarettes. And so then I started looking in the newspaper, and the telephone book for Nicotine Anonymous. I mean, after all, I was ready to quit smoking, so where was Nicotine Anonymous? Couldn't find it in my area at all. And I did find one, a 3-hour drive for me. And that's kind of a long distance. That'd be a 6-hour drive for a meeting, and I just don't have the gas money to make that all the time. So my next sit down through at the computer and type into the search engine, Nicotine Anonymous, and I found Voices of Nicotine Recovery. Actually, I found the TypeShare room first. And then I went in there, and there was a bunch of people's names listed with email addresses, so I called on the first one. I emailed the first one. And I just told her, I said, my name is Lynn. I said, I want to stop smoking, but I don't know how to get into the rooms. She came online immediately. You know, when Nicotine asks us to do something, and a Nicotine, you know, anonymous member asks us to do something, even if they're not a member yet, we answer. She came on and she took me into the TypeShare room and showed me how to enter that. Then she brought me over here to Voices and showed me how to enter this. And this was the first meeting I ever came to. It was Voices of Nicotine Recovery. And when I heard the voices of other people, I knew this is where I'd be. Because I could hear the happiness, the sadness, the joy, the phoniness in other people's voices. And I knew that if I could hear that in other people's voices, they would hear it in mine and call me on it. So the next day I came to a meeting of Voices of Nicotine Recovery. Now I didn't have a mic or anything. I didn't have a, you know, I could hear because I had speakers. But I couldn't hear. I mean, I couldn't speak. So I was forced to listen. There's a saying that I heard once, you know, stick the cotton in your mouth and listen. I listened to that, well, probably for a week I listened. So I heard a lot. I found out I needed to get a sponsor. People would post the tools of the program on the screen, meetings, sponsorship, literature, phone calls, and service work. So my main quest, though I was, you know, coming to meetings and everything, was to find a sponsor. And my first sponsor fired me because she could no longer come to meetings. So I went to her sponsor, Roz, and I said, well, seeing that your sponsee isn't my sponsor anymore, will you be my sponsor? And so Roz became my sponsor. She shared a whole lot with me, but she was there to help me through Voices of Nicotine Recovery. And for the first few phone calls that I ever made to her, it was like, gee, it sounds like you need to talk to your HP, Lynn. Finally, I said, look, if that's all you're going to say, what do I need you for? I know that. And she laughed. And we became very, very good friends, plus which she, you know, she got me. She helped me. Every time I had a question, she was there, and she was able to answer it. So I still didn't, but you know, I looked at the people in this room, and though I knew this was where I belonged, I still didn't believe that this would help me. For one simple reason, I'm used to face-to-face meetings, see people, touch them, sometimes smell them if they had been using. But here, you know, it was, you know, the emoticons were my only way of being contact with you. And I think I had been nicotine-free probably for 3 months, something like that, when I realized that it was working and that it would work for the simple reason that I had all the cravings that everybody else has, but I didn't want to smoke. So no matter what, I would do something to not smoke. I was on eating through to my neighbor's apartment. When the cravings finally let up enough that I didn't have to eat all the time. Now, there's something I'd like to tell everybody. If you ever get to around 3 months nicotine-free and you find yourself still nibbling, go to the doctor and get your thyroid checked. When I first came to the meetings, there was a woman that was here, and she kept repeating that over and over and over. Well, at that 3-month period, I had started eating normally. I was beginning to be active, you know. But I noticed by the scales that I was still putting 1 or 2 pounds on a week. My doctor asked me to check my thyroid. He called me at home that night, which is unusual for a doctor, and said, "Lynn, when you came in today, I thought that you were still putting on weight because you were still eating, still snacking." And he said, "I would have been dead wrong." He said, "And the reason I was putting on the weight because I had a very low active thyroid, and that was caused by my not smoking. It changes my metabolism, especially the thyroid." So I found out that that woman who was preaching all the time, and that's what I thought she was doing, was absolutely right. I continued on in Nicotine Anonymous, and probably about 6 months, somewhere around in there, I started greeting. And, I mean, I'm a firm believer that we don't start at the top. Well, for me, I'm a firm believer, for me, I don't need to start at the top. I need to stop at the bottom of the steps and work the steps up just like I do the program steps. So I began greeting. And we were over in Yahoo at the time, and that was a job in itself, greeting over there. Kenny, that leads the 7 o'clock meeting on Thursday, he was always coming to the midnight meetings. And Susie Cream Cheese, who doesn't come to meetings in there, we were always the greeter at the midnight meeting, depending whoever put our hand up first. And by this time, I had started living this, or I guess I was probably working the steps in my life. Step number one, I knew when I got here that nicotine was a drug. And how did I know? Because I had cravings every time I put it down. I don't crave anything unless it's a drug of some kind. I knew my life was unmanageable because of the things that I did to obtain nicotine. And when it comes to I got stuck on step number two for quite a while. I came to believe power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. For me, sanity was simply not smoking. And like I say, it was around 3 months that I realized, hey, I'm not smoking. And, you know, by this time, people are coming to meetings and they're saying how their taste has returned and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, when will my taste return? And one day, that thought went through my mind when somebody else was talking about how their taste buds had, you know, woken up and everything. I think I was on my third fudgesicle or something, and I thought to myself, Lynn, I think your taste buds have woken up. But those were some of the things. And I craved sweets so badly. And when I put down the alcohol, I could understand why I craved sweets then, because alcohol has such a sugary base to it. But cigarettes, I just craved sweets like you wouldn't believe. And then I found out in a meeting one night that when they whatever they do to the leaves, tobacco leaves, if they pull them or whatever, they soak them in a sugar-based solution. And then they dry them out. And then they make the tobacco and all that. And I thought, well, no wonder I'm craving sweets, because this has just as much of a sugar base as my other addiction. So at least I understood why I was craving sweets, but it didn't explain why I was still eating so much. Okay? But, as I said, I started to slow down around 6 months, between 3 months and 6 months. And at 3 months is when I realized, like I said, this program is working, because I didn't want to smoke. And so I was able to move right into our third step, where I was able to make a decision, past tense, to turn my will and life or the care of God as I understood Him. Now, just the way that sentence is written, it's something that I've done in the past. And that's what I realized. I had already turned my will and my life over. For me, it's not a God, I turn my will and life over to you sentence. It's something that I do inside myself. And then I reinforce it with the words. Having done that, and by this time, I'm now I'm reading the promises, I'm reading the traditions and stuff like that, plus which I'm greeting. Wasn't until I had done my fourth step, and that's where I, you know, the fourth step is where I find out who I am. Doubt that I'm a very prideful, angry, fearful, self-centered egotist. And man, it came across in meetings. It came across in meetings. So often I was told, Lynn, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And I'd say, well, give me an example of what I say. And nobody could. And by this time, I'm still working the steps in my life, and I got to the point where I just said, God, change me. But I think that was quite a bit later in sobriety. But that's how I remember the last talk I gave. My sponsor and Susie Cream Cheese introduced me, and they both said the same thing. You know, they had some nice things to say, but they both ended up with, it's not what Lynn says, it's how she says it. And finally, not knowing what it was I said or how I said it, that's when I asked God to change me. And over the intervening days, He has. I am not the same person that came to Voices of Nicotine Recovery. I am a completely different person. When I came here, like I said, I still was angry and fearful and all this, and I still am all those. I'm just not as angry or as fearful or as self-centered or as controlling. I forgot that one. That's a big one with me. That's one I can't seem to shake. And I always, in any of the literature, where it says that God, as I understood Him, would completely remove all those. But they're better than they were. And one thing I have found out through my own experience is the more that I reach out to people in the meeting rooms and help them, the less I'm angry. You know, there's days that go by and I'm not angry. There's weeks that go by and I'm not angry. And that just always amazes me. I used to come into these rooms and I would be so judgmental of what people would say. Because, you see, I knew how it was done. Because I was in a different 12-step program. But like a friend of mine in here says, credits don't transfer from one 12-step program to another. And I realized, looking back, when she said that, that what I had done is I had come in here as a newcomer. Yes, I had experience in another 12-step program, but it sure didn't help me with my smoking. Because I was still smoking. Not when I got here. I had been 3 days nicotine free. But I had tried to stop smoking in the other 12-step row, and it just didn't work. I needed a room that concentrated on nicotine and nicotine alone. And that's what I found here. That's what I found here. I found people that knew what I meant when I said, I've stopped a million times, but I always picked up. People here knew what I meant. People on the outside or who aren't nicotine addicts don't know what I mean by that. They don't realize the insidiousness of this condition. It's worse than any drug I have ever come across. And I've only come across two, so it's not very much. But it's just so insidious that I know today, if I was ever to pick up anything again, it would be cigarettes. Thank God the obsession has been removed. You know, the part in our promises where it says, sooner or later we will begin to think of Nicotine Anonymous rather than nicotine, that promise came true. And I remember when I first heard it. Ha! I said, don't give me that. You know, I will always think of nicotine because, you see, I had always thought of nicotine as my friend. It had been with me, gosh, since I was 15, I guess. It had seen me through a divorce. It had seen me through recovery in another program. It had seen me all the ups and downs in life. My cigarette was always right along with me. So I considered it my friend. But I have to ask myself, and I just read this someplace recently. What friend would want me to kill myself? What friend would want me to smell? What friend would have me doing the things that I did to attain it? A friend would have made it easier. Nicotine was actually an enemy of myself. By the time I got here, I'd already had lung cancer once and survived that. And God, as I understood Him, was with me and carried me through that time. And I know that. And I also know, or I don't know, I feel very strongly that if I had not put the cigarettes down when I did, I would not have survived the next bout of cancer. Okay. I cannot tell you that when I stopped smoking, my health came back, okay? Because it seemed like it was one thing after another. My first year anniversary, smoker anniversary, I was in the hospital. My second anniversary, I was in the hospital, okay? So, but the thing is, through all this, I didn't pick up. I asked God, as I understood Him, to take this from me, and He did. The God that I understood does not play games with me. If I'm serious. I mean, if I'm just playing around, you know, He'll let me play around until I do get serious. Which leads me into my character defects, where I listed my character defects. Well, I took my fourth step, and I took the defects out of there that I saw. There was a lot of fear, a lot of self-centeredness, a lot of controlling. And then I remember my sponsor saying, I'm ready to have them removed, you know, in the seventh step. Just go ahead and I'll ask God to remove them. She said, Lynn, it doesn't work. And I said, well, what do you mean it doesn't work that way? She said, what you do is you ask your HP to remove the character defect in the day that it's prominent. In other words, the day that I'm angry, that's when I'll ask to have God remove my shortcoming. The day that I'm controlling, that's the day I need to follow through and ask. And we have a step in the maintenance part of our program called the 10th step, where I can do a daily inventory on myself during that day. And I can, if there's an amends to be made, I make it immediately. I don't wait around because I know how insidious nicotine is. And I know that practice and living this program will be a great factor. With the power in the group and the grace of my higher power, today I'm not smoking. I have never quit smoking. I've never said I quit smoking. I have never said I will never smoke again. But what I do say is I'm not smoking today. Today is all I have. Yesterday is a canceled check. It can't be changed. So I might as well leave there and not worry about it because it's there. It's in the past. And I'm only promised tomorrow. And that's what it is. It's a promissory note. I could finish this speaker meeting tonight, go to bed, and die in my sleep. And if I was today worrying about something in the future and I died tonight, all that worry would have gone and ruined today for me. So I ask myself three questions when I am in the future. Because I'm not saying I never get in the future, because I do. But what I'll ask myself three questions. Is there anything today that I can do to change that? If there is, I do. I change it. After God has given me the serenity to change that. The serenity prayer, the short version of serenity prayer has always been a part of my recovery. Because like in the first line, I don't just ask God to help me accept the things I cannot change. I ask for the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. You see, I don't do much in this meeting. I have not done much to get to be nicotine free. I've come to meetings. I got a sponsor. I studied the steps. I made phone calls. And I started service work. and I have continued. That's all I've done. My higher power has done everything else. My higher power has removed the obsession to smoke. My higher power is the one that removes my shortcomings. All I can do is make myself available in life to continue living this program. And it doesn't mean there's days when I don't, you know, my current sponsor once asked me what step I was on in this particular day. And I said, well, all of them. And she said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, if I'm not angry today, none of my character defects are present. Character defects don't become present unless I'm in the presence of human beings. That's either face-to-face or online. I can become judgmental online. I can become controlling online. Just ask some people. They'll tell you. So, if I woke up this morning and I was happy, as my sponsor pointed out, she said, it'd be really stupid for you to ask to have your anger removed because you don't have any at that particular time. But if sometime later in the day I get angry, then that's where I need to ask. That's called living the program. And then if I've hurt anybody or harmed anybody, I need to make amends immediately. Not when I want to, but immediately. After I did the seventh step and learned, and even there, even in our literature, it tells us that God, that our higher power will remove these. And usually when I'm sponsoring somebody and we get to the seventh step, I will usually tell them, I want you to read that seventh step over and over, and I don't want you to call me, I don't want you to email me until there's a sentence in there that's going to strike you. And I've had sponsees, you know, people, my sponsees don't do what I want them to do. You know, they would email me, they would call me, and they'd say, well, is this it? And it'd be some inconsequential line. I'd say, no. Because people are always going to do what they want to do. But one by one, they would always come across that one sentence that says that God will remove our defects. And we might as well let them. Which takes us on to step 8. Because this program is a continuous thing. Yeah. Well, I made a list of persons that I had harmed. And so I did that. Again, I went back to my 4-step. That was one experience I brought from my other 12-step program. Don't throw your 4-step away. I'd go back there and then I'd go back over my life. To try and find, you know, situations where I harmed somebody. And if I had, I would make amends to them. And I didn't say I'm sorry for this, because how many times had I said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. And then continue right on with the same behavior. Now when I make an amends, I just say I'm wrong. I was wrong to either say what I said or do what I did. And I just want you to know that I know I was wrong. Once I've made the amends, it's up to the other person whether they're going to accept it or not. If they don't, they don't. But I've done my part. I've tried. So I don't have to keep trying and keep trying. I have a sister, and we're not real, real close. And I always think, of course, it's my fault. And I've either said or done so. Now I've made more amends with her than I think that I made with anybody in my life. Until finally it hit me, Lynn, you've made your amends. Stop. And so I stopped with her. And oddly enough, that's when she started coming around more. Our program is broken into 3 parts. The first 3 steps, which are reflection steps, that doesn't require us to do anything. Just think. And for me, that was real hard because I didn't like to think when I first got here. The next part of our program are steps 4 through 9, and that's called the working part of our program. The 4th step where we're actually asked to do something. Take paper and pencil. Paper and pen. That's what I always did, was use paper and pen, because if I used pencil, I could go back and erase it and change it. So I use pen. That way I can't change it. The fist up, asking me to share the exact nature of wrongs. Not my forced up, but the exact nature of my wrongs, which comes out of my forced up, with another person, God, and myself. And it's by doing that out loud that I'm really admitting it to myself. I'm not just thinking it up here in my head. I'm admitting it. This is what I did. I was controlling. I was judgmental. Not the situation and not to name the person that I was controlling with or anything. It's just that I am controlling. If I ever stole anything, like I stole cigarettes from my mom when I first started smoking, I took them out of her pack, out of her cart, and without her permission. That's called stealing. It means I'm a thief. Okay? If I've ever lied, it means I'm a liar. Those are the exact natures that I would look for. You know, and especially fear, because that affects our self-esteem. Those are the wrongs that I would look for. And I'd always ask what my part in it was. Now, what I found was that there were lots of times that I didn't have any part in it. It was somebody else's, you know, and there's another literature that I read that says, you know, if that happens, pray for the person. They're just as sick as we are. And so I try to do that. And I encourage everybody to do that. Got a resentment, Lynn? Pray for them. You know, that didn't make much sense to me when I first heard it. You know, if you got a resentment, pray for the person. Come on, give me a break. But the only thing is, the first time I tried it, it worked. A person was saying something and things about me. And, of course, little gossips that we are, or that I was, somebody would tell me, and I'd listen. And I finally went to that person, and I said, you know, I really resent. And he just interrupted me, and he said, you have a resentment? He said, that's your problem. And he was so right. You know, my anger is my problem. My resentments are my problems. They're not anybody else's. They're mine. Anger. Nobody makes me angry. Nobody has the power to make me angry unless I choose to get angry. And choosing to get angry isn't the thing where I sit back and say, okay, I'm not going to be angry at this person because they just, you know, wipe me up one side and down the other. It's something that I automatically do, so I have to find out how not to be angry. I have to practice the opposite of anger, which for me, and this is only for me, is love. The more I practice love or caring for other people, the less angry I am. And that goes through on all of my character defects. Third part of our program is called the maintenance steps. Never hurts to sit in on a meeting where they're discussing those. It's 10, 11, and 12. But if you're brand new in this program, you're not there yet. But it never hurts to sit in and listen and hear what other people have to say. 10th step, as I mentioned earlier, will help me. Oops, my screen just went blank. There you are. The 10th step is where we admitted that when we were wrong and promptly admitted it. And I think I covered that before, so I won't go into it again. Our 11th step is sought through prayer and meditation to increase our conscious contact with God, asking for knowledge of His will and the power to carry that out. And that's exactly what I do, and I phrase it in those words. I have asked for specifics in the past, asked for patience, for instance. And I got situation after situation after situation in my life where I had to practice patience. Or tolerance, you know, please give me tolerance. You know, the one thing that I did ask God for, and this was something that I wanted, is I asked God, as I understood Him, for willingness to want to stop smoking. Because from 77 until 2000, that's where I was in life. I wanted to be a non-smoker, but I didn't want to stop smoking, so therefore I didn't. Step 12, which I never can remember, so probably I'm not there yet, Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to nicotine users and to practice these principles in all our affair. Step 12 embodies all the steps, 1 through 11. Because that's where I learned the principles. And where I carry this message to other nicotine users. You know, once I was in a rehab center I had broken both my ankles. And I'm in this rehab center. Now, I can't put any weight on my ankle, so I'm either sitting up in bed or sitting up in a chair. And when I first checked in there, they asked me if I smoked. And this is what I said, and I don't know why I said it, because I usually don't go this much into detail with email to somebody that's not in the program. I just said yes. I said yes, I did use nicotine, but I stopped smoking in 2005. Now, somehow word of this got around the building. Little gossips that all of us human beings are, even when we're saying good about something. I'm sorry, that's gossip. Pretty soon, I started having not the residents that lived there, but the workers that worked there coming into my room and asking me how I stopped smoking. I had so many people ask me that I finally got a hold of Chick, I think. I think she was the first one I got a hold of, and Chick got a hold of other people. Chick sent me a whole bunch of newcomer booklets, and then she'd gotten a hold of Jan, and Jan sent me a bunch of the little cards with Voices of Nicotine Recovery URL on it, and then the office manager at WSO sent me a whole bunch of pamphlets. That's one thing that WSO does for us. I mean, she heard that I needed those. She put them in the mail and sent them to me. I got them all in one bag, if I remember right. So then I had a friend of mine come into my apartment and get my legal-sized envelopes, and I'd make up little starter packets, you know, a newcomer's booklet, a card, and a pamphlet, you know, and close it. Did that for like 15 of them. And 15 of them I gave away because that's how many people came in and was talking about it. Now, I don't know if any of those people stayed nicotine free. I do know one thing. I stayed nicotine free. I firmly believe it was my heart that carried me through that, and I firmly believe that it was also working with other nicotine addicts daily, almost on a daily basis, that kept me in touch with the program, because I couldn't get to meetings. Somebody sent me a laptop, didn't have any sound on it, didn't even have a sound card, and people would argue with me, it has to have a sound card. Well, it doesn't have a sound card. And somebody else brought me another laptop. I could watch DVDs on it, but I couldn't connect to the internet. So I just wasn't able to get to meetings for 5 months period there. But working with other addicts, you know, saved my life. Because I could have very easily, from my room, I could see where the workers congregated and smoked their cigarettes. I could have very easily gone out there and asked them for a cigarette. Except I didn't want to. It never occurred to me. It wasn't in my mind. Because I was surrounded by recovery, even if it was just the pamphlets or the phone calls that I got. It was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. And that's how I tried to carry the message to nicotine users. I try to practice these principles in all of my affairs. I'm not perfect. I'm not able to practice the principles totally all the time. And there comes the 10th step. Admitted when we were wrong, and promptly made amends. And as I stayed in Nicotine Anonymous, service work has always been very important to me. And I get other people into service, too. I say, come, you're being for secretary. You have to be here to accept the position. And they got there, and they accepted the position. And then they, like me, moved up in service work. I now publish a 7 minutes newsletter, and what that means is it's kind of grunt work. You know, I get the database from the office manager, and I get the 7-letter newsletter. It's all sent to my computer from the publisher or from the editor. I forward the 7 minutes onto my printer and say, tell them how many copies I want, and they'll print me out the number of copies. and they'd deliver it because I don't drive anymore. So I made that one of the conditions, you know, in the price was that they would deliver. That's the first thing I'd ask them, do you deliver? And so I found one printer that gave me a very, very good price, and delivers. And the post office even picks them up right downstairs where the mailbox is. Because I asked her. I told her I was numbering them. She said, no, just put them out there on the bench. I'll take them. So what I do is stuff envelopes and make lay address labels and get them out to nicotine addicts. And that's another way I support nicotine addicts. They don't know me. But I kind of like working in the background because when I do that, I can't exhibit any of my character defects because that's a job of love. It's something that I like to do. And Pam, I think that's all I do. So take the mic, please. And thank you all for listening.